Living a life that depicts the teachings of Islam is the dream of every Muslim. Everyday Muslim, Saturdays 11 a.m. on Women Radio 91.7, is in collaboration with Muslim Public Affairs Center, NPAC. Everyday Muslim will address the misconceptions on Islam, foster a peaceful coexistence, and guide the everyday Muslim on the journey in Islam. Everyday Muslim, Saturdays 11 a.m. on Women Radio 91.7, simplified understanding of the deen.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, everyone out there. Good morning to you all. You are welcome to another exciting edition of Everyday Muslim, a program that dwells on our day-to-day activities as individuals. And as you all know, our custom is to invite renowned guests who shed more light on topics that pertain to us all as individuals. And of course, it's not limited to the Muslims alone. I am Rashida Adetun Okeolaniyo, and with me here is...
I am Sakina Titilayo Okonu.
We will be anchoring today's show together. Everyday Muslim is powered by MPAC in collaboration with Women Radio 91.7 FM. For sponsorship and advert details, contact 090-555-58686. 090-555-58686. Before we introduce our guest for today, let's take a message from the Nasheed titled Islam, a Way of Life, by Mini Muslim. Back. If you are just joining us, this is your 11 a.m. Saturday talk show program, Everyday Muslim on 91.7 FM. Our topic for today is parenting styles and child abuse. It's a continuation of what we had some weeks back. And our guest, who will be doing justice to this, is in the house. But before then, we would like to take today's quote from Sekina.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Greetings of peace and a beautiful morning to you out there. Today's quote of the day is from the Hadith, the sayings of the Prophet, which says, "Every one of you is a shepherd and is responsible for his flock. The leader of a people is a guardian and is responsible for his subjects. A man is responsible for his family. And a woman is responsible for her household. And a woman is responsible for her household, her children, and a guardian to her home. The servant of a man is the guardian of the property of his master, and he is responsible for it. No doubt, every one of you is a shepherd. Just as a shepherd protects his flock, so you too should protect your household." This hadith serves as a support to strengthen the family unit and the society at large. So everyone has a responsibility to take care of those under their protection and care, So everyone is invested with the responsibility of protecting those under their care, and we'll be questioned about this in the year after.
Thank you very much, Zekina. That hadith gives me goose pimple anytime I reflect on it. The fear of accounting for our sheep, that's our children, and those things that Allah has given to us, is something that we have to continue to look at every now and then. May Allah continue to guide us. Ameen. If you are just joining us, this is your 11 a.m. Saturday talk show program, Everyday Muslim on 91.7 FM. Now it's time to meet our guest. She is a trauma counselor, and by name, Mrs. Adijola Shakira Omobolanle. Omobolanle Shakira Adijola is a certified trauma counselor, trained in adverse childhood experiences and early trauma. She holds a certificate in child protection. She runs Bin Amal Foundation, a non-governmental and not-for-profit organization, which provides social and economic empowerment for survivors and victims of gender-based violence and disadvantaged communities across Nigeria. She is a graduate of Attitude Development International, ADI. Omobolanle is also an NLP practitioner, a passionate gender-based violence advocate, as well as being a trained certified emotional intelligence specialist and a global change agent. Shakira is passionate about spreading awareness against sexual and all forms of gender-based violence, concerned about the total well-being of families and, by extension, children, while creating impact in terms of lasting solutions to improve the lives of the less privileged. Omobolanle is a firm believer in securing a safe and well-balanced environment free from all forms of violence. She holds executive member position at the African Network of Professional Counselors and other professional bodies. Join me in welcoming Mrs. Shakira Adijola as we continue our discussion on parenting styles and child abuse in Islam. It promises to be engaging, enlightening, entertaining, and encouraging, as usual. You are welcome, Mrs. Adijola.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you for coming again.
Welcome. That's
thank you.
Of course, our
nice
audience
here once again.
Our audience called for it, and now we have to give it back to them. I'm sure that everybody are excited to learn more on this topic, but before then, we would just like to give a brief recap for the audience who missed part one of the last episode. That's the last episode on parenting styles and child abuse. We were able to enlighten us on the sayings of the Prophet, 7 before 7 before 7. Play with them for the first 7 years of their life, then teach them for the next 7 years, then advise them for the next 7 years, and then after. If we use this hadith, it will help solve issues concerning parenting. May Allah not test us with our children. Ameen. That's the sincere truth. We mentioned also that children are a manna, a trust from Allah, and the best gift we can give children is proper upbringing. That our duty as parents is also to promote, support the physical, emotional, social, and intellectual development of our children from infancy to adulthood. We also mentioned it requires understanding of the important fact that the duty of upbringing of children is divinely enjoined, and part of our personal accountability is to be a good parent, and parenting is a must and not just making babies. Our guest was also able to enlighten us on parenting styles and how they are tools towards raising responsible, confident individuals who will reflect their own upbringing and contribute to society in a productive way. She also mentioned different parenting styles and how it works. However, we shouldn't forget that Islam teaches some fundamental principles and techniques which parents benefit from in all seasons in order to meet their objectives. Alhamdulillah, we are going to continue with it. The program for today is going to explore more on the important principles on how we can use them together, using the modern studies to ensure that we have proper relationship, proper communication, excellent care of children from infancy to adulthood. This program is being sponsored by a brother who wants to keep himself anonymous. What we can just say is that may Allah continue to enrich your pocket and may Allah continue to guide you. Jazakallah khairan to the brother who has kept himself anonymous. We wish you all the best always. Amen. Thank you. Amen. If you're just joining us, this is Everyday Muslim on Women Radio 91.7 FM. And the topic we are discussing is parenting styles and child abuse in Islam. In a few minutes, our lines will be open to receive questions and comments from our listeners. And the number to call is 07000-917-917. 07000-917-917. If you prefer to use the SMS or WhatsApp, 070-317-5657. 070-317-5657. This is where we are. Our audience have lots of burning questions, actually. So let's start with this. We would like you to share a quick recap on parenting styles for the benefit of our listeners who missed the first episode. Just a brief recap.
Okay. All right. Thank you once again for having me over. And I, just like we had discussed before, you know, we started the part one, that I knew that it was going to open up a can of worms. So I wasn't surprised, and I'm glad that I'm here to, you know, give more insight. So the last time we talked about different styles, parenting styles, and I mentioned that these parenting styles were based on two quotas, or should we say two parameters, and that was demandingness, the degree to which parents demand maturity or extend control to their children, and responsiveness, the degree to which parents respond to their children's emotional and developmental needs. And it was based on this that we had four parenting styles, which was the authoritarian parenting, where the parents have high expectations for achievement and they're also warm and responsive to their children's emotional and developmental needs. We had the authoritarian parenting, where they also have high levels of, you know, control and responsiveness from their children. However, they do not have a high level of responsiveness towards their children's emotional and developmental needs. We also had the permissive parenting. Those are the ones that set very few rules or boundaries for their children. They just run it by the ear. And then we had the neglectful parenting or uninvolved. These were the ones that do not set any firm goals. They don't have any high standards. They are pretty much indifferent to whatever their children do or their children's needs.
Thank you. Okay. What are the effects of negative parenting? And are there practical steps available for troubled children to repair and recover?
Okay, so when we say negative parenting, it depends on that which block it falls under. Because negative parenting has different parameters. It's either the parent is emotionally unavailable, it's either the parent is emotionally abusive, is the person physically abusive. Basically, is the person depriving the child of one or more of their fundamental rights as children. So if we're saying, what was that question again?
What are the effects of negative parenting and so if their you now practical say, steps?
So based on that, negative parenting, depending on what the child is experiencing, if it's a child that is emotionally abused, both by an uninvolved parent or by a parent that pretty much, you know, hauls out verbal abuse at the child, we have low self-esteem, we have anger issues, substance abuse, social anxiety, depression, suicide, the list is endless. Because there's no form of abuse that has any positive effect. Huh. And most of these children then go on to become, you know, young adults or children in schools that they don't have any social skills, they have educational issues, they have trouble integrating in class, they have trouble, you know, pretty much just settling down with anyone. And then your second question where you were asking about how to deal with, there was a term you used.
The negative, is there any practical steps to avoid it?
To avoid what? You said something child.
Troubled children.
So I think I said this the last time I was here, that there is no troubled child. Rather, there are children that have needs that have not been met. Each child that exhibits a behavior that you are not pleased with, or a behavior that is socially unacceptable, it is either that child saw it growing up. Remember, these children came to us as clean slates. The child saw it growing up, began to emulate it, and then validated it as the normal behavior. Or you have a child that has a need that is not being met. You have a child that has an emotionally unavailable parent. And this child gets to school one day, sees other people making noise, and sees that they get the attention of the teacher because they were making noise or they were being naughty. By the time that kind of child coming from that kind of setting sees that play out on a regular basis, begins to think, oh, okay, if I'm naughty, I'll get a lot of attention. That's one need that was not met. That child is trying to meet it with a negative behavior. So rather than say, how do we sort out troubled children, or how do we treat or manage troubled children, how do we repair them, or find out what were the things or the experiences or the patterns or strategies that formed that behavior? Remember, children don't just decide overnight that they want to behave naughty. It starts from somewhere. And if we as parents are not conversant, or we are not attentive enough, or we do not have a relationship with these children, it is easy to miss the warning signs before it becomes a major issue.
So there are always a warning sign somewhere.
Every behavior has a structure. It has a structure, it has a pattern. It's just like building a house. Wow. Before a child decides that I want to steal, it starts from somewhere. It's either a thought. That thought becomes curiosity. That curiosity becomes, okay, I've seen it somewhere. Was that person caught? Was that person not caught? And then there's the battle between values and beliefs. Is it right? Is it wrong? Should I do it? Will I get caught? And then the person practicalizes it. It's a series of steps. It doesn't just happen overnight. When people say, oh, someone was in a shop and the person just stole a phone and quickly put it in their pocket, it's a split second thing. Our brains are amazing. It's an amazing powerhouse. While we are seeing someone make a decision and we think, oh, the person thought it out over time, sometimes split second decisions are made in our brain faster than even we, the human beings, can see. And that's why when they say, oh, someone committed murder, that's why even the law has, you know, accommodations for that. Say maybe the person did not think out the murder, it just happened. So either the person thought out the murder, it just happened. Maybe they were arguing and the person just picked up the knife and stabbed the person. Most people say, no, the person planned it. It's always a trauma response. The person might have been maybe in a situation where he or she felt threatened and couldn't defend themselves, and their brain automatically kicks in and tells them, this is happening again. Not again, not again. How do we save ourselves? Carries the knife, stabs someone. So it's the same thing with a pattern of a bad behavior. Nobody just decides to be bad. It starts from somewhere.
Thank you very much. Our phone lines are now open. 07-0700-917-917. 07-0700-917-917.
Thanks so much, Mrs. Haji John Labola and Shakira. When we talk about abuse, child abuse, people often think about just the physical, like beating, punching, and eating of a child. What exactly constitutes abuse? What are the various forms of child abuse?
Okay. All right. So when you said just hitting, it goes way beyond that. Child abuse has so many facets to it, and none is better than the other. None is better than the other at all. Each one is as terrible and as impactful on the child's life as the next one. So we have different types. We have emotional abuse, We have the physical abuse, the one you mentioned earlier on, where we have, someone hitting or beating a child. We have the emotional one where someone is verbally abusive to a child all the time. We have sexual exploitation. So this is when a child is pretty much groomed. So we've learned to an extent. I have gotten to that point where I term child sexual exploitation under grooming, and this is because the individual who wants to abuse the child using that method is after just one thing: eventually getting sexual intercourse with the child. So that's one of the forms. Then there's also, I'm sorry, my brain is a bit tired today. So then there's also neglect. So this happens in cases where a parent either has a mental health issue, or is not financially capable to look after their child and provide.
Hello, good morning. Oh, we lost that call.
Oh, okay. So where a child is able to provide, and where a parent is able to provide the needs of that child. So pretty much, if we break them down into, understandable blocks, we have the physical abuse, where a child is hit, beating. We have the emotional or psychological abuse. The parent is either overly verbally abusive, or, holds back emotion or consent or even compliments for the child. We have the physical neglect, where the child is deprived of basic human rights. And then we have the sexual abuse, which has, sexual exploitation under it.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Before we move further, you said something about the signs.
Okay.
Can you just give us one or two signs that
a child is being abused? Okay, so one of the things is change in behavior. That one is usually the major red flag. Major red flag. And that's why it's important where, as teachers, as caregivers, as nurturers, we need to understand each of our words when they come in on the first day, and then be able to identify when their behavior changes across board.
Hello, good morning. Lost that call. So we are talking about child sexual abuse, Mrs. Ajijola Shakira. Okay. Child sexual abuse goes beyond the actual sexual act and involves all forms of sexual touching, exposure to pornographic content. Good morning.
My name is Abubakri.
Abubakri. Welcome to the Everyday Muslim Show. Where are you calling from, please?
I'm calling from Ogba Ikeja here.
Ogba Ikeja, welcome to the show.
Yes, I am hearing this topic for the first time, and it's so interesting.
Well, thank you.
First of all, let me say that Alhamdulillah to Almighty and Allah Subhanahu wa Ta'ala, who gave me children, who listened to me, who gave me ability to bend, so that today I don't have any problem. But I have a problem where I live with my wife. My child is with me today. I am an octogenarian. Number one, a small estate I live here. There's a lot of things I've seen. And as a Muslim, initially I couldn't take me and my wife away from it. There are children. If you talk to them, you correct them, the parent will correct them. If you correct them, it becomes a problem. Now, as a Muslim, I call my wife, I say, no more. But again, even if I come out of my apartment, the way I see these children behaving, doing something that may harm them, I cannot keep away from it. What sin do I commit by neglecting these children for whatever they do? Thank you.
Thanks so much, sir.
All right. Thank you so much, sir, for your contribution. So to that, I would say every problem has a solution. We just have to think outside the box. Does your estate have a landlords association or an avenue where all the parents have meetings on a regular basis? If that is so, then it is something that you might bring up. So rather than, you know, going straight to the point that, oh, we have children that, you know, they misbehave on the estate, and when we talk to their parents don't, you know, want them to be corrected. Rather, you know, touch on what your own pain point is. And that's the fact that these children lack respect, not only for themselves, but for elders. So maybe just table it for them that, oh, I would like our children to, you know, have a better quality of life. I would want them to be, you know, upstanding citizens. Let them be like ambassadors for this estate. That when people say, oh, who is this child? Oh, this child comes from that estate down the road. Don't you know them? The children there, they're very respectful, very well-mannered, very well-behaved. And then the parents now say, oh, okay, how can we do it? So you either call in someone, or you have one or two of the parents that you know that have upstanding values, and then tell them, oh, please, you would help us coach these children. And you start from there. And I'm sure that would work. I am double sure it will.
Thanks so much, Mrs. Ajijola, for that. We are talking about child sexual abuse, and it involves all other forms apart from the actual act. It entails touching, exposure to pornographic content, or taking the sexual images of a child. All these things amount to child sexual abuse. What are the telltale signs of an abused child? And what steps should be taken when you notice that a child has been abused?
Okay. So let me just quickly correct something. We have two forms of child sexual abuse. There's the contact and non-contact, or touching and non-touching. Okay. So the contact one is where the child is either touching someone else's private parts, someone is touching the child's private parts, or an adult is encouraging the child to either touch their own private parts or the private parts of someone else. The non-contact one is the one that falls under, you know, pornography, exposing children to explicit movies or images on television, showing the child pictures of naked bodies or videos. It falls under that. So for the effects, The effects are most times we always put them under two blocks. So it's either the emotional effects or the physical effects. And before I say any of these effects, I always tell people, please, most times there's always the, when people explain effects, people tend to now begin to either see what is not there. So we need to be careful and not use these effects as a, you know, like a, set in stone marker. I remember once when I was still volunteering then, I worked with a lawyer that is a very passionate gender-based advocate, and he told us the story of, you know, he went to a school, they had a talk with the PTA, and then some months later, one of the women, you know, came to his office and said, oh, she's double sure her husband is abusing their baby.
Wow.
He's sexually abusing the baby. And, you know, he was asking a lot of questions. She said she was very sure. She was ready to go to the police station and all that. And he was like, okay, so what did you see? She said then she saw soreness in the baby's bum. Every time she changed the baby's nappy, the child was always sore. The child was always crying. And he, you know, went further and started asking certain questions. Okay, what kind of nappy do you use? She was a first-time mom. What kind of nappy do you use? What kind of nappy cream do you use? Turns out the child had nappy rash.
Wow.
But because she had already listened and absorb those effects, she wasn't seeing beyond that. So if he, as a lawyer now, he was thinking in terms of, I just want to get a case and, you know, make waves, he would have gone ahead with it without finding out what was going on. So please, before I mention these effects, do not take them as a set in stone rule. They are just guidelines for us. We know our children better than anyone else, and we know how their bodies work. We know how their emotions work. So yeah, so just like I said, it's either the child's behavior has changed, or the child is secretive. That one is always a second red flag. When your child that is usually communicating with you on a regular basis suddenly starts keeping things from you. And, you know, it's not as responsive as they used to be. It is a red flag. The physical ones are pretty much what I just mentioned a few minutes ago. It's either the child is sore, the child is not walking properly, the child is either complaining of pain in, you know, private body parts. Pretty much falls under that.
Thank you so much. All right, Sajijola. Are there policies for mandatory reporting or provision for whistleblowers of cases of child abuse?
Yes. So Lagos State has three avenues, actually. So one is the DSVRT hotline, or DSV, they're now called DSVRA, Domestic and Sexual Violence Response Agency. They have a hotline where you can call and, you know, give your report anonymously. There is also the family support unit in each police station in different local governments. You can walk in and, you know, tell them whatever is going on. When you get to the police station, you ask for their gender desk. So at the gender desk, you can now tell them what is going on. It's either you want your name to be dropped in the report, or you want to drop it anonymously. Then we also have what we call the Child Protection Network. So the Child Protection Network basically does this full scale. They are concerned about crimes against children, violation of children's fundamental rights. So they deal with anything from sexual exploitation, abuse, neglect, maltreatment, everything. And each child protection network has an office or a representative in every single local government. Okay. So you can report to any of those parameters.
Okay. Lagos State, yes, or do you apply to all states in Nigeria?
Yes, all the states in Nigeria have family support units. They have gender desks. CPN as well, yes, they have in other states. They do. And then if you do not have access to any of these, then you can check within your area for a child's rights advocate.
Okay.
So pretty much that's why I and a lot of my other colleagues too are, you know, vocal on social media in different places, that if you do not have access to these resources, then you can reach out to any of us. So there are a lot of reporting parameters.
Okay. If you're just joining us, this is Everyday Muslim on 91.7 FM. And our lines are still open, 07000-917-917. If you prefer to use WhatsApp or message, 070-317-56537. 070-317-56537.
All right.
Jazakallah Karian to the anonymous brother who sponsored this program for us today. Thank you very much. We have a question here. Good morning, madam. Please, I have two questions. What is the role of mental health issues or maladjusted behavior in children have to do in children upbringing? If a child has or exhibits signs and symptoms of mental health issues or issues that do not come from the parent styles of parenting, what help can parents assess to deal with the situation? At times, it is the parent that need to help to deal with the trouble. Okay, you said not trouble, they need it. Okay, the children and needs are not met. Now, what the person is going to say is that, what if you find out that there are some symptoms or signs that a particular child is exhibiting that does not conform with the parenting style? What do the parents do? Because sometimes the parents need to deal with these children that their needs have not been met.
So sadly, one of the major things as parents nowadays that we do not put much emphasis on is emotional health, resilience, and our children's social skills. And that in itself has generated a lot of mental health issues for children that now also, yes, begin to show itself in bad behavior or socially unacceptable behavior. For that, my answer would always remain the same, because I'm a trauma counselor. Please seek a professional. There are child psychologists, there are children and teen counselors. In fact, if I'm counting off the top of my head, I know about close to 20 in Lagos State alone. Help is always there whenever you need it. You can either look up on the internet, or you can look at two organizations. One is ADI College of Counseling and Psychotherapy. They have a vast array of students. You have ANEPCO, African Network of Professional Counselors. There you would also find as many professionals as you need. You can pick anyone for your child.
Okay.
Thank you.
Before we move further, a child, how do you know that a child has mental issues? Because I think that when it comes to mental issue, it's a very big word. So how do you know that child has mental health issues?
So because Google is a lot of us's friend, most people tend to go and do research first. And then based on one or two or three things they see, they now conclude that their child has mental health issues. Half of the time, like I said, it might not even be mental health issues. It might just be the effects of a need not being met. But it's still the same thing. You would most likely, once you notice that your child has changed or the attitude has changed and you have personally intervened, you have tried talking to the child and nothing is changing, you would still need a professional to give you their own opinion. Because whenever we have mental health issues, let's also remember that there's something called the spectrum. For someone that has anxiety, there are some people that their anxiety is manageable such that they can still go out to where there are large gatherings. They can still relate with people on a regular basis. All they just need to do is go back home, rest up a bit, and they are good to go. And yet, there are some people on the other end of the spectrum that their anxiety is so bad that the moment they are put in a crowded room, even for children, they are put in a crowded room, they start sweating, they start shaking, they begin to cry, or they are extremely aggressive. So a professional will still be your best bet, but it starts from when you are worried about certain behaviors you are seeing in your child that were not there before. And you want to know what is happening and you want to nip it in the bud. So seeking a professional is still the best way.
Okay, we have another question here. What is the role of the third parent in the home in child raising? The third parent is the TV, which is also contributing to child upbringing. What's your advice in managing the matrix of parenting when you consider this important soft addiction in almost all homes?
It still falls under what I said earlier on that sadly as parents, there are certain things we have started to delegate. Television is just one of it. We have parents that drop their children off at school and expect the teachers to pretty much be the parents. They expect the teacher to teach the child values, teach the child everything they need to know. Now, while television for some homes is a necessity, some parents have tended to now use it as a stopgap. Oh, I want to have time to myself. Once I plunk the children in front of the TV and switch it on and they are watching, nothing, they don't disturb me, so I'm good. So one of the things I do as a parent is, yes, my children do watch television. However, any cartoon, any program, any documentary, I make sure I watch it ahead of time before they watch.
Mm-hmm.
We all remember when this popular film came out. I've forgotten the name. That had people play a game where they were losing their lives. Squid Game. And I remember it was the rave among children in school. Everybody wanted to watch it. They all wanted to know what was going on. Initially, I was like, I'm not particularly a film person. But because my son had kept asking that when I come home, mommy, I want to watch it. I had to sit down and watch all the episodes. And when he came home, we had a talk about it. There are some scenes in it that might affect you. There are some scenes in it that might leave you, you know, with a different mindset. Are you sure you are ready? I talked him through without giving him information about what the film was about. And he said, okay, mommy, when I get to the part where I feel, you know, I can't handle it, I will fast forward. It's the same thing with when you have children going to, and I know of some parents that, you know, they run a system in their house where during school term, no television. It's only when the schools are on holiday that they watch. Or some do, when school is in term, watch TV for only an hour or two. And then when you are on holidays, we also manage it. But the most important thing there is, in handling that third parent, you also have to have a conversation with your children. First of all, find out how much of a problem is this television for your children. Secondly, how do you solve that problem? So it's not about forcing them to not watch TV. It's about having a conversation with them. Okay, this is what television does. Yes, television is an avenue for you to learn a lot. It's an avenue for you to know what is going on in the world. But there's also something of where too much of a thing can be bad for you. Same way too little of a thing can be bad for you. Have the child understand how striking a balance between that third parent would help them and not be detrimental for them.
Thank you. Research has shown that sexual abuse has been estimated at 19.7% for females and 7.9% for males. Where can child sexual abuse take place? And does gender have something to do with child sexual abuse? Is the girl child more prone to being sexually abused than the male counterpart?
Okay. So let me take the first question before I now talk about the statistics and the second question. So child sexual abuse can occur anywhere. There's no hard and fast rule. It can be at the side of the road. It can be in a bush on the street. Just like we read in the news recently, it can be in a lecturer's classroom or his office. It's anywhere. It doesn't have a particular hard and fast rule that, oh, the person would drag the child to a bedroom. No. Most sexual predators are opportunists. And they know that what they are doing is wrong and they can get caught at any time. So they make use of wherever they are. So in following with that statistics, one of the things as gender-based advocates that we are still trying to, you know, work hard on is getting accurate data. There's the numbers for boys and men are low largely because of our culture and the society. Most people do not believe that a boy, either young or old or a toddler, can be abused. It took a while before, you know, even the LGBTIQ advent became a thing. Most people felt, you know, maybe it was just a disease. People didn't understand it. So because of the numbers, we cannot, you know, fully say that boys do not get abused as much as girls. They do. But because most male cases are hardly reported, or they do not get the attention they need, even the numbers for the girls too still does not cover a lot of strata of people. There are people that live in disadvantaged communities, slums where, you know, they are squatting on pieces of land here and there. There are people that live in remote villages. They don't have access to television, to telephones, or even to their local governments, and maybe once in a green moon thing that they go to. So those are, you know, pieces of data that we don't even have. So we cannot say that it is girls that get abused more than boys. I would rather say the number is pretty much almost the same. But because of the data and how we get it, we tend to think it is more girls than boys that get abused.
Okay, thank you very much. The question that was sent to us, there's a particular one that I think the person needs us to explain more. And that is, what is the role of mental health issues or maladjusted behavior in children have to do with the children upbringing?
Okay. So like I said, our children come to us as clean slates. Nothing. They don't have anything in them when they come. It is now our own job as nurturers, as parents, and how we handle this child. Remember that in as much as our brain is something physical that, you know, we can see when they cut open someone's head, there's still a whole lot that goes on that we do not even know about the brain. So let me use the example of, you know, one of the parenting styles that I mentioned, that's when the child is raised by a parent that is emotionally uninvolved. So this child is crying, is in the crib, is crying. Parents doesn't pick the child up. Doesn't carry the child, doesn't cuddle the child. This kind of child gradually begins to withdraw. So because our brains have hormones that secrete when we are happy, hormones that secrete when we are sad. For that kind of child, and definitely is a no-brainer, the child pretty much secretes more of those sad hormones.
Wow.
And then you have a child that begins to... It's a bit difficult to explain, but I'll try as best as I can. So using that kind of example, like I said, that kind of child now grows up thinking everybody in the world is like that. Or when the child gets older and then goes to school, sees other parents and other children and how they relate, begins to think there's something wrong with them. Yeah. The human mind is a strong thing. What we focus on grows. It grows. So when that child believes that, oh, I'm not loved, obviously that begins to get the child to think. The thing between thinking a lot, there's a thin line between it and depression. Most people think that children cannot get depression. Let me shock you today. Children can and will get depressed. if their needs are not met, if you are not there for them emotionally, they can't get depressed. So most of, like I said, these mental health issues or any challenge does not just happen overnight. So when you say a child is mentally maladjusted, on what grounds? What has given you the impression that your child is mentally maladjusted? Like I said, Google has a lot of information, but we also need to be careful when we are checking online, not to label our children. I remember we had a teen program recently, and a young girl walked up to me and said, I've been told I'm a procrastinator and I'm not that smart. I'm extremely dumb. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, who told you that? She said, everyone. And that's what she believes. And that's why, you know, it's a major issue for her. And I asked about academics, you know, asked about instances where she felt she was procrastinating. By the time she explained, this was not a case of procrastination, rather a case of time management. Mm. When someone feels, I can do this thing in like maybe 2 seconds, when I'm done with this, and she forgot. We're all human, we all forget. For the dumb part, she wasn't doing as well as her peers in class. Apparently, her parents, family, and friends had high expectations because her other siblings were doing exceedingly well, forgetting that she is at a different phase of her life. She has not gotten to the phase of her life where the others that were doing academically well were doing. So now imagine that kind of child. You keep telling that child over and over again. That child grows up, begins to think, I'm not smart. I tend to not do things on time. One of two things will happen. Either the child accepts it and does not live to their full potential in life, or the child begins to blame everyone around for those negative validations and becomes aggressive, becomes socially unacceptable to almost everyone, and then you tag it as, the child is mentally maladjusted or has a mental imbalance. And then, yes, there is the mental imbalance that comes from the usage of drugs. Huh. That's a different story entirely. Huh. Drugs have the ability to affect and alter the brain chemistry. For that one, once you are aware and you are able to prove that your child is using drugs, then, like I keep saying, you need to seek a professional.
Okay, thank you. Before we take that question, are there any legal consequences for sexual abuse?
Yes, there are.
Because I have heard a lot of cases of sexual abuse, sexual harassment, but I've not heard of anyone, maybe I'm mistaken, that has been punished openly. So can you please tell us more about
this? Like I said, what we search for, we find. And what we need information on, we also find when we search for. So there are tons of articles in the news of people that have sexually abused children that have been sentenced to prison terms. So DSVRA, like I mentioned, has something they call a child protection policy. And they always encourage every school, parents, nurturer, caregiver, to have that child protection policy. It contains all the things you need to do in terms of protecting children from different types of harm and abuse. And it also contains what we call the Criminal Code Act of Nigeria. So the Criminal Code Act has different sections. So because I'm not a lawyer, I deliberately asked a very good lawyer friend of mine to, you know, give me the updated rules or the updated penal implications of someone that sexually abuses a child, because we know that the law is something that constantly changes. So she said for Section 135, indecent treatment of a child is punishable by 7 years imprisonment. Section 137, defilement of a child is punishable by life imprisonment. Section 261, sexual assault by penetration, punishable by life imprisonment.
Wow.
Section 262, attempted sexual assault by penetration, punishable by 14 years imprisonment. And we have Section 263, sexual assault, punishable by 3 years imprisonment.
3 years.
Wow. So there are years attached to each one based on if you actually penetrates the child, or all you were caught doing was just touching the child or exposing the child to pornographic images. There are laws in Lagos State.
I think these laws should be published for the public to know about it. Because a lot of people feel that if they go and report, nothing is going to be done. But if we have this, Andy, in almost every homes or schools, I think it will go a long way. And if it cannot erase, it's going to reduce the rate of sexual abuse.
All right, Mrs. Ajijola. Talking about legal consequences, we need to establish evidence. So let's take a case study from Nina Medina. Nina Medina was a young child in 1939. She was the first girl to go. She got pregnant at the age of 5, and she gave birth at 5 years and 7 months. She became the world's youngest mother.
Okay, so one of the things, just like you said, that evidence is key. For Lina's own case now, the evidence was already, it had already shown itself. She was pregnant.
Yes, but the issue was that she couldn't help the investigation, so the predator got away with it. So how can an underage child help investigation?
And that's where the work of a professional comes in. That's why I keep saying it. I've been hammering on it since we started. A child psychologist has the ability that a regular teacher, a parent, might not have. There are certain ways you can elicit information from a child. We as traditional parents tend to think, oh, when you see the child and you're like, who did it? The child would automatically point. Keep in mind that this is a minor. And their imagination or their grasp of things is not as solidly formed as a 2-year-old cannot reason the same way a 5-year-old will. Same way a 5-year-old will not reason the way a 10-year-old will. So having a professional ask adequate questions, and just like I said, parents being able to understand or take note of the warning signs when their child changes or behavior changes. Because for a 2-year-old to become pregnant and no one knew until it was showing. That's a red flag for even the case study in itself. So pretty much a professional is needed at all times when cases like this happen. Even for adults, let's not even say adults per se. When we have cases of children between the ages of 15 and 18, we still use a child psychologist at some point. Ask questions.
Okay. Thank you. There's a question here. The prophet specifically said that there should not be any form of physical punishment on children up to the age of 7. Absolutely none. Even after this, no physical injury or harm is allowed. Can you please explain and advise how to comply with this, given the enormous challenge of resisting temptation to do so, even if no physical harm will be inflicted on the child?
Alhamdulillah. Let me just quickly say this. This is a topic on its own. It is something we have been dragging for years now, where parents seem to think grabbing a cane, grabbing a spatula, grabbing belt is the best way to pass across a message to any child. Now, corporal punishment is one of the things we are still trying to get parents to understand that is not the only result. Just like I mentioned to the octogenarian that called earlier on, that there are different ways to do something. Always think outside the box. One of the things that I've realized about children is that there are certain things they love doing. It is like bread and butter for them. So when a child is misbehaving, rather than beat that child, why not withdraw one or two of the things that they love doing? Most people will say, oh, if I tell my child to face the wall, it has no effect. For a child that their bread and butter is jumping up and down, they're extremely active, asking them to face the world is like a death sentence. Growing up for me, I loved food. I still love food. And my mom knew then that once I misbehaved, the only way to get my attention was to tell me, you're not going to eat today. And I would cry, I would beg that, please, anything you want to do, but please give me my food. Please. So there's always something rather than beating a child.
Okay. Can you share some cultural Islamic guidance and teaching to safeguard happy childhood and keep the children safe from predators?
Okay, so I would give a general term. And it's still pretty much what we talked about when we had this part one. When you have a relationship with your child, when you adequately have what we call quote-unquote the sex talk with your child, A lot of us as parents do not do this because we feel, oh, maybe that we are piquing our children's curiosity, or we're exposing them to things they should not be exposed to. Once your child is able to speak and can understand you and can express themselves, that is the time to start having the sex talk with them. And you can tell them according to their ages. When they are between the ages of 2, when they are in that toddler stage, you can talk to them about private parts, which parts are to be seen, which parts are not to be seen. You know, teaching them about body positivity and then keeping their body safe. When they are older and able to understand, you can explain to them about, you know, the private parts in explicit terms. Let them understand that no one can touch it. And as they grow older, you can now begin to expand on it. But the most important thing when you are having that sex talk with your child is, please, please, and please do not give these private parts funny names. A penis is a penis, a vagina is a vagina. Breast is breast. We've had a case where a child was telling her mom that uncle used to poke her with pencil. And the mom thought maybe it was, you know, literal pencil, that she was just, the uncle was maybe bullying the child. Until one day she was baiting for the child and she wanted to wash the child's vagina, and the child started crying that it's paining me. Okay, what happened? Say, her uncle is always choking me there with pencil.
Wow.
The mother said she almost dropped dead. And what? So turns out the pencil was a penis and it had been penetrating the child. So please, call the private parts by their appropriate names. Don't give them funny names.
And don't,
please,
call the breast onions.
I don't, please. They all have names. Please call them by their names so that your children understand exactly what it is that they are getting into. And then can we please stop this old method of telling children that once they start their menstruation, if a guy touches them, they will get pregnant. People still do it in this day and age. Yes, they still do it in this day and age. Please have that talk with your child. Expand for her on menstrual hygiene, the implications, how she can get pregnant, how she can get STDs, how she can get cervical cancer, how she can get genital warts. The list is endless. Please have that talk based on the child's age. Thank you.
In short, we should not be shy as parents to discuss their kids. They are our kids. And remember the hadith that was read earlier on by Sekina, that we are what? We are the shepherds of our sheep. And we are going to account for these kids.
Yes.
Remember, they're not just gifts for us from Allah. We are responsible for their upbringing. And if you don't want to cry later in future, please and please and please do what you're supposed to do now. Guide them properly.
Thank you so much, wholesome sister Ajijola Shakira Bolanle. Wow. How will have you here again?
No problem. No problem.
Thanks so much, Zakila Khairan. And special appreciation goes to our sponsor for today's show. May Allah grant you the best of reward in this life and the hereafter. Thank you so much.
Amen. Thank you to all our listeners out there. Hopefully, you had a lovely time with us and you were able to learn one or two things again today. I have learned a lot and I'm sure that we still have more questions that will be coming in. Please don't hesitate to send them to MPAC website. Atoibe goes to WFM and MPAC for this program. A big thank you to our engineer, Ilari, and our producer, Misuro, for pressing the buttons. Until we come your way again next week, same station, same time, I'm Rashida Adetun Okeolaniyo. And from my partner,
and hi, I'm Sakina Titilayo Okonu.
We are saying Masalam. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Have a lovely weekend.
There's faith in my world. It comes back to your teachings and all your words. From your life I have learned to be patient and caring at every turn. The reason I'm strong, you're where I belong. In a world spinning out of control, the reason for my pride, you are my guide. Now I will always follow you. Sallallahu, oh Muhammad, peace and blessings on you every day. Alayka sallallahu.